This is a replay of the Thursday night, February 20th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together tonight. Yep, if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. Otherwise, believe me, I've got plenty of starter topics on all of your requests, some of which we'll actually play tonight. All right, so a couple stories that got my attention today. You know, it's one thing when you hear about delivery drivers behaving badly, and occasionally they'll run into people or vehicles or whatever, but this is the fact of an Amazon driver who was caught on camera running over a woman twice. In other words, he ran over her, backed up, and ran over her again. And it sounded like the old insurance man joke. You may recall that, because, of course, it's much more costly if you maim somebody than if you kill them. Sad, but true. You know, if they've got a life full of pain and suffering and therapy and all that, that's going to cost the insurance company a lot more money than if you actually outright killed them. And, yeah, it's the way it is. So, you know, that's the old joke about, well, if you do run over somebody, make sure you back up and make sure they are dead. Well, in this case, I'm not sure what the Amazon driver had in mind, but, yeah, there's surveillance video that shows it. The driver of an Amazon delivery truck hitting a woman in Baltimore, then backing up, running over her again, then getting out of the car, briefly checking on her, then just leaving the scene. I kid you not, a 29-year-old woman crossing the street in Butchers Hill around 9:30 at night this week, in fact, Tuesday, and WBAL-TV had the video, a blue Amazon van slowly hits the victim, drives over her in the crosswalk at East Pratt and South Chester, slows down, then backs up, rolls over her with his back wheels again, eventually comes to a stop, then exits the van, walks back to check on the woman, who's lying on the ground screaming and moving around slightly. After several seconds, the driver gets back in his van and leaves the scene. Meanwhile, another car pulled over by that point, seemingly to help the woman. Emergency personnel and police showed up at the scene soon after. Fortunately, the victim has non-life-threatening injuries, amazing but true, and was treated at a local hospital. But neighborhood residents were pretty upset about this, to say the least. They say people often drive too fast in the area, but this is a first. Yes, it is, to say the least. And Amazon, for its part, said they were made aware of this terrible incident, and the driver in question has been suspended. Am I suspended? Fired outright, maybe, from delivering on our behalf. And we're working with his employer and law enforcement as they investigate. So obviously, this is not a situation where Amazon itself employed the driver, but it is a contractor who employed drivers. And apparently, that is an absolute mess and unacceptable all the way around. Yeah. Now I don't feel too bad about my screwed up Amazon deliveries. Yeah, with me, here's the deal. The mail is available because I don't have it sent directly to my door, wherever my door is at the moment. I have it at, you know, at drop ship locations like a UPS store, things like that. And obviously they have hours. And all over my Amazon profile, I explain the hours. That's right. From 8 to 6 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 Saturday, and 10 to 3 on Sunday. That's it. It's pretty simple. And sure enough, they're always trying to deliver it Sunday night. And today I got a notice when I went to Amazon saying, apparently you need to update your delivery hours. No, nothing apparent about it. It's there in black and white. I double-checked it. Absolutely there. But yet people continuing trying to deliver when there's no delivery time. Well, like I say, that was somewhat annoying after hearing this this story. I guess I'm glad I'm alive. All right, so the other thing, where was it here? Yeah, the other thing too numerous to mention. I did have something else that caught my eye here somewhere. And, this was one where you really have to wonder what the judge was thinking. And this is the New Orleans area, Kenner to be exact. That's where the airport is, Moisant Field. If you fly into New Orleans, you're landing in Kenner. All right, so here is a Louisiana woman who was linked to the death of a Kansas City sports reporter. But it turns out she has a trail of victims. So you might have heard about this, but Adam Manzano, an anchor and reporter on assignment to cover the Super Bowl in New Orleans, who is from Kansas City, was found dead in his hotel room February 5th. And Danette Colbert, 48, was arrested after attempting to use his credit cards at stores in New Orleans. And police footage, says footage, at the hotel shows that Manzano and Colbert in the French Quarter were met up there on video, and the pair ended up in his hotel room. All right. And then, of course, she leaves. He doesn't, for obvious reasons. He's dead. So right now she's only facing property crime damages. But this is the interesting part. When the story hit the news, throngs of victims, okay, a half dozen at least, came out and said, whoa, I know about this. And as I say, at this point, she's just facing property damage, but they're looking into the possibility that she drugged him based upon other reports and an arrest and a conviction. And so authorities are awaiting his toxicology results before deciding what to do. But meanwhile, one of the previous victims is speaking out. And this is a guy, David Butler is his name, who said he was drugged and left for dead in 2021. And he's coming forth saying, I've been afraid she would strike again. And what happened in this guy's case, it was November of 2021. He went to the Boca Raton to unwind after working on a renovation project. Now, about 1 a.m., he meets Colbert and another person in the French Quarter there. And they're standing around outside talking with some other people. And Colbert asks if I want to join him and go have a drink, he reports. And I was like, sure. And he remembers leaving his first drink on the table while ordering another. Moments later, things took a turn. When he started on a second drink, he started feeling very strange within a matter of minutes. He was woozy. He felt like the world around him was going dark. He said, I knew something was wrong, and I knew I had to leave. So Colbert follows him out of the bar and offers to help get him home. And she loads him into his SUV. They take off. And that's pretty much all he remembers. His project manager later found him unresponsive at the renovation site where he was working in New Orleans. Family members couldn't reach him. He was vigorously awoken, and instead of going to a hospital, despite feeling drugged, he began to check his finances. Now, this is literally hours later. And what he finds, with multiple emails reporting it, is that $134,000 had been transferred out of his bank account into cryptocurrency. And around this time, what was discovered is that, yes, he was drugged, and Colbert used his biometrics to access his iPhone while he was under the influence. And $134,000. And the interesting part is that the crypto account had a unique username, and that led the victim to her Facebook page. At that point, he calls the New Orleans police. This is 2021. He says, when I met Ms. Colbert and her associate, there was no mention of prostitution. It was nothing like that. Nothing seemed inappropriate or out of the ordinary in that realm. It was just a night in the Boca Raton, in the French Quarter. Well, she's eventually caught. So last October, a jury finds her guilty of theft, computer fraud, illegally transmitting monetary funds, and you're saying, how long did she spend in jail? Not a day. The judge suspended her sentence, granting her probation, and ordering her to pay restitution. Butler will be dead before he sees his $134,000. And at that point, he said, I felt like there was a grave injustice done for society and the public safety, and I was worried that this would happen again. And now we have 3 years later, and it did. And he said he pushed for jail time. He wrote to the judge expressing dismay over lenient sentencing. And Kenner Police says, oh, yeah, well, we know her. She was also booked on similar charges in Las Vegas and in Jefferson Parish. That's where Kenner is, by the way. And they also think that she very well may be connected to a December 2024 death in the French Quarter Hotel of yet another, in this case, tourist. And Butler, the guy who's out $134,000, says, you know, if she were behind bars, Manzano might still be alive, not to mention whoever this was in December. And he says, I feel a tremendous amount of guilt. Well, he shouldn't. He did everything he could. He wrote to the judge. He spoke out, and the judge felt, oh yeah, let's just give her probation. I know that's where the conspiratorialist in you comes out, and you think there's got to be more to this story. Well, last night we were going to play a request, and now I got to find out who the request is for. Yes, I've actually gotten all your requests out, but yeah, getting them together with who requested them might be a different thing. However, what occurred, it was Jack in St. Charles, actually, who wanted to hear Delicato, and number one record in 1952 for weeks, and the darn thing wouldn't play. John, of course, cheered because he couldn't believe anybody bought this record, but I assured him that millions of people did. However, I fixed it, and you'll hear it next right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is, number one for many weeks in 1952, and it was Jack in St. Charles' request, Percy Faith and Delicato, which was the first hit version in 1952, but it actually had been released earlier in Argentina. It was written by Valder Azevedo in Brazil, but top of the Billboard charts in 52 and quite the song. So, yeah, Dr. John redid it. I should have found that one. It's actually Dr. John plays Mac Rebinac, Volume 1. And a little New Orleans style of Delicato. In any event, there you have it. And, oh, yeah, I promised Tubby that we would talk about Frank Sinatra and the Capitol years, or actually what she had asked for was Frank Sinatra and of course, Nelson Riddle. And it's interesting, the relationship there, but Frank Sinatra's career, and you kind of have to waltz a little down memory lane to understand how he wound up with Nelson Riddle. He was not too pleased, let me tell you that. But he started out, and of course, he quickly got involved big band singing and was with Harry James for years. But then he wound up in 1939 leaving to become the lead singer of the Tommy Dorsey Band. I think he was making all of $125 a week, which at the time in 1939 wasn't bad, but he was appearing right in Chicago at the Bomber House. And ultimately, Harry James was the gentleman, and he released Sinatra from the contract. And in fact, the first time that Sinatra made a public appearance outside of the Palmer House was in Rockford at the Coronado Theater in 1940, and opened with Stardust, and everybody was just captivated, to say the least. And it was interesting how people described him at the time, just a skinny kid with big ears, but you'd hear his voice and be absolutely captivated, and it was true. And for years, Frank Sinatra and Tommy Dorsey had a very symbiotic relationship. In fact, he was a father figure to Sinatra. And, you know, some would say that Sinatra was taking on Dorsey's traits. And he actually had said at one time, the only two people I've ever been afraid of are my mother and Tommy Dorsey. And actually, though, there was a bit of a rift while he was doing that, because Sinatra and Buddy Rich, who was the drummer, were rivals. But the reality was, while both of them wanted to get top billing at the time, later there was an enduring friendship as far as that goes. So in his first year with Dorsey, Sinatra probably recorded 4 dozen songs. And continued to do this, and his popularity grew. And what happened, and you know where this is going, Sinatra starts to push to record some solo songs, and he does for a while he's still with Dorsey. And the arranger was Alex Stordahl, and he conductor as well. And so, you know, he appeared as a solo act at the Hollywood Palladium and stuff like that. Well, what happened in short order was Sinatra decided he needed to go solo. And his desire at the time was to compete with Bing Crosby more than anything. And of course, this is 1942. The war is on. And Sinatra has a problem if he wants to leave Tommy Dorsey. A huge problem, because his deal with Tommy Dorsey gave Dorsey 43% of his lifetime earnings. There was a legal battle, and you know, that's where the first stories about, well, you know, Frank's mob related came up, because all sorts of stories came up saying that Willie Moretti, the Godfather, coerced Dorsey at gunpoint to relieve him of his contract. Well, who knows? But in the meantime, here's Sinatra as a solo act, however he got there. And here he is with an arranger, producer, Stordahl, and so it goes. And so the war, really, 42 to 45, it was Sinatra mania, to say the least. Now, after the war, it starts to be a different story. And at that point, he's on Columbia. And, you know, dealing with Mitch Miller is no walk in the park. But he signed as a solo act with Columbia in 1943, June of 43. Now, if you're a student of history, you'll know that that was during the musician strike. The strike was from 42 to 44, and you could not record anything new, period. So Columbia re-released the Harry James stuff, like the 1939 version of All or Nothing at All. And it actually got to top five records, and he had some great success. And he's performing on your hit parade and on stage. And obviously, strike is over. Now Columbia wants recordings, and they want them quickly. We'll pick it up there, but yes, we'll play you something about Sinatra and Nelson Riddle, and I'll get to that too, coming up on WGN Radio.
There are many, many crazy things that will keep me loving you. And with your permission, may I list a few. The way you wear your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that. No, no, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams. No, no, they can't take that away from me. We may never, never meet again on that bumpy road to love. Still, I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you hold your knife. Doo 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 doo. danced until three. The way you've changed my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me. No, they can't take
WGN
that
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Frank Sinatra, and that's from his first album on Capitol, and came out in January of 54, recorded in 53, and it was on there, They Can't Take That Away From Me. But the title of the album was Songs for Young Lovers, and to this day, it's probably repressed and put on, in more ways than one, and put on CDs and things of that nature. But before we get to that, first you got to know about Frank's downfall. And what had happened after the war, he'd been a real just teen idol on his own through this, or Bobby Sox idol, as they used to call it then. And here, 46 to 48, he's still selling a lot of records, but 48, and he's still on Columbia, has a slump. And it is a big slump. And on top of that, by 1950, he's having a personal slump too, because you might remember it came out that he was having this affair with Ava Gardner, which at the time was just oh so shocking, and the destruction of his marriage to Nancy. And so all that, in fact, the destruction of the marriage to Nancy was so big that he had to borrow $200,000 from Columbia to pay his back taxes after MCA refused to front the money. So here he's pretty much now being rejected by Hollywood, obviously. He turns to Las Vegas, and that's actually how he got to Las Vegas. And he makes his debut at the Desert Inn, and then ultimately he's at the Sands and doing very well with that. But 1952, Columbia dumps him. Just says, you're not selling records, we don't need you. And at that point, what do you do? Well, here comes Capitol. And the guy who at the time was VP, later I think he ran the label for quite some time, Alan Livingston, he signed a seven-year deal with Sinatra. And the first session was not to any degree gonna get much airplay. By the way, recorded at a KHJ Studios right there on Melrose. Well, at that point, we have Livingston, who says, you know, I think we need another arranger here, because Sinatra is still working with his old friend, and he knows, Livingston knows that Sinatra does like Billy Mays. He said, well, we'll get Billy Mays. So reluctantly, Sinatra agrees to this, gets to the session, and Billy Mays is not there. And it's explained to him that Billy May was unavailable. For all I know, he was never even contacted. But Nelson Riddle will be here. And initially, that was... by the way, Nelson Riddle was on staff at Capitol. And he's the guy who was Nat King Cole's musical director. And Capitol was nothing if not the house that Nat built. So with that in mind, he was a golden boy at Capitol. And now here's Sinatra, who's being forced to work with him. Initially, he's not sure he likes it. But after he records the first song with him, which is I've Got the World on a String, Sinatra just says, I'm back, baby. He's just enthralled with this. And that's when the second session happened. There were actually two of them, May and November of 53, where that Songs for Young Lovers album came out, and all those wonderful, wonderful Nelson Riddle and Frank Sinatra compilations. And, the reason I picked They Can't Take That Away From Me, it's quintessential Nelson Riddle arrangement. And it's interesting because you can't take away from him that he was a tremendous arranger. But that is where it began and end. And many other arrangers, including Billy May, thought that, well, he's just, I don't know the word I want to use, because I don't know if there are any quotes of Billy May actually describing it, but I'll just go with formulaic, that basically, well enough that Billy May decided to do a parody. I am not making this up. Yes, he called it Solving the Riddle, and appropriately so. And it was kind of a parody of exactly the effect you'd get when Nelson Riddle was, in fact, arranging your record. Thank you. there you have it. And yeah, that pretty much embodies it. But Nelson was no slouch. Now, interestingly, he was a very unhappy man. And he more than liked to drink. Of course, his wife at the time was an alcoholic, which didn't help. And he was having all these affairs. In fact, there was this huge affair, pretty long term, actually, with Rosie Clooney and all this stuff. But nonetheless, he not only did arrangements for Rosie, so to speak, but and Nat King Cole, but Ella Fitzgerald or Antonio Carlos Jobim, even Peggy Lee, Dean Martin. And so it really became a style of arranging, hence the Billy May parody. And it was quite the deal, and it certainly worked well with Sinatra until it didn't, and we'll pick that up there at some point tonight, actually. In fact, we'll talk a little bit more of that collaboration and then what happened. And actually, even though you might know Nelson Riddle, at least many of you will, certainly I do, from the things like the theme from Route 66. The reality, as far as public awareness, didn't come until decades later when Linda Ronstadt was doing that Pop Standards album, and she actually credited him on the album cover that people will be aware. Ultimately, he and Sinatra had a real falling out, and that's a story. That's a story as well. So 888-876-5593. Last night, Ruth was on hold for forever and a day, and I said, if you call back, you will be our first caller. So I have been holding other people off so Ruth could be our first caller, and now she has called. So I kept my promise, and you are our first caller tonight. Ruth, whatever you want to say, say it.
Oh, hi, Raleigh. I don't know if, oh, for jingles, I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a Raleigh evening tonight and a cup of cheer. So I'm calling about first, I'm wondering if Hortabi did Frank Sinatra or did Nat King Cole or Ray Charles ever do the Serenade of the Bells? Because my high school prom from St. Mary's, and their song is The Bells of St. Mary's, Frank Sinatra Jr. was appearing at the Linda House, interesting enough. He was Chicago powerhouse, the father there, two houses. So I thought maybe Tubby would love to hear about Frank Sinatra Jr. because his voice was as phenomenal as his dad.
Yeah, his voice was really interesting. In fact, if you closed your eyes, you thought you were hearing Frank Sinatra. And unfortunately, I think that's what stopped him from having more of a career than he did. But I don't happen to like Serenade of the Bells, but everybody and their brother did it. Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Bing Crosby, Dean Martin, Jim Reeves, on and on the list goes.
Okay. And the other thing was that yesterday was the Act of Kindness Day, and also would be the week.
Uh-huh.
This week would be an act of kindness. So I thought I'd mention something really very interesting. There is a volunteer, not-for-profit organization. Well, Evanston has flowers, if they still do it. They called it Act of Kindness Flowers, where they get flowers from stores or places, and they pass them out all over the place, and they call them Act of Kindness. But there is an organization started from a lady who I think is moved out of her original location. She's been on TV several times. Amazingly enough, I, who don't watch TV, happen to become cognizant of her. She has Lasagna Love, which is sent out, started out as Neighborly, and then she now has 700 volunteers in Chicago delivering lasagnas. Well, I think it costs a lot of money to make a lasagna, a lot of time, and then there's the delivery to it. So I started my own juxtaposition with giving this out to other people, and Team Raleigh can proceed. It is Patti LaBelle's peach cobbler.
Oh.
Now, what I do with it is, it's small, it's somewhat expensive, but it's much less expensive than lasagna and not as time-consuming. So I add cottage cheese to it, And so I started to make it go further, plus put the nutritional part into it. And if I do the apple with peach, then I'll use regular peeled apples that are softened and cooked and add that to the peach cobbler. So she does have several cobblers, but there's the peach one and then there's the apple peach one. And I just think it's absolutely wonderful to do an act of kindness, sending out Patti LaBelle's, there we hear those bells ringing, Patti LaBelle's peach cobbler. So right. Act of kindness is phenomenal, and I love the suggestion for Team Raleigh to do jingles. So here's one. If you wash your teeth with, I wonder where the yellow went. When I wash my teeth with, brush my teeth with Pepsodent.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, now, by the way, Random Acts of Kindness Day was actually Monday, the 17th. And believe it or not, it was founded in 1995 in Denver, Colorado. A guy named Will Glennon came up with it, and right now he's chairman of World Kindness USA. And it's interesting how different countries celebrate it. In New Zealand, they say pay for another person's meal in drive-thrus, letting someone go ahead and in line, buying extra at the grocery store, donating to food pantries, and that kind of things. But I love that. Just pay for another person's meal in the drive-thru.
Well, last night I lost the energy on my phone and my charger wasn't nearby.
I'm so sorry.
So I went through the whole night without my phone.
I'm so sorry.
Which is always not the best avenue of approach for my circumstances with not being able to walk.
Yeah.
But I was almost falling asleep again tonight, but managed to get through.
Well, there you are. So, I promised.
There I go.
Yeah, and I have delivered. Now, go plug that phone in, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Ruth.
Good night.
All right. So, 888-876-5593. Tell you more about the Frank Sinatra Nelson Riddle story, and maybe we'll get some tubby questions on it. We'll see. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Frank Sinatra, and you're saying, it doesn't really sound like Nelson Riddle. Well, that's because it's not. By then, we're talking 57. That's Billy May, indeed. And Come Fly With Me was huge as far as albums go. And that started a certain amount of animosity. And I won't say started, it might have been there all along. There was a 1955 movie, and of course, you'll remember the title because of the song that Frank Sinatra did, Young at Heart. And it was named after that song, actually. But what's interesting about that is that there are many people who felt that that was actually biographical. Because it's a bitter pianist arranger who's never had success as a songwriter, for which he's hungering, and the fates have chosen to sell him short. They said, let him have a little talent. Yeah, so many people thought, in fact, Frank Sinatra actually said to Doris Day that, you know, it was absolutely Riddle. Said, could that be the part was written just with Nelson Riddle in mind? Yeah. not enough talent to do anything great on his own, but just enough to help other people, was the way Frank had said it. Meanwhile, here's Riddle, who just wants to be a star, and it's not happening. And like I say, he was flagrantly cheating on his wife, and that was the Rosie Clooney deal and all of that. And the problem came on top of that when Sinatra, here is now by the end of the 50s, rock and roll is big, to say the least. You know, even by 58, you know, this is absolutely encroaching on his success. So he's looking to go in other directions, including Don Costa. And Riddle was resigned and resentful. He's not inhibited by any particular loyalty. Yeah, is the way Riddle said. He had to think of Frank. Yeah, well, indeed. And so, meanwhile, Riddle goes and he's shifting his focus to scoring TV and film stuff. And that's where Route 66, beautiful stuff, and all that. But probably it wasn't until, like I say, that Linda Ronstadt album that that he was really known to the public. But meanwhile, by 1960, Frank is not happy at Capitol. And the problem is, of course, is that the golden boy on every account is Nat King Cole. And so Frank Sinatra is now feuding with Alan Livingston, the guy who brought him to the label. And at that point, he attempted to buy the label. And that wasn't gonna help. Then he tried to buy Verve, and that actually had an initial agreement. Norman Granz was gonna do the deal, but it never materialized. So that's when he started Reprise, which we all at the time called Revenge Records. And so in an effort to show that there was a new direction, that was it for at least temporarily for Nelson Riddle. And so that's where you saw Don Costa and Neil Hefti and even Quincy Jones, as far as that goes. And of course, Reprise did very well on its own. And ultimately there was somewhat of a reconciliation with Nelson Riddle. But what ultimately happened was, and this was the end of it, is there was a tribute show to Nelson Riddle that Frank Sinatra was supposed to appear. I think this was 1978, and he bowed out at the last minute, and that was it at that point. There was no way that tension was ever going to be unwound. So that was the story there. But of course, Frank went on to do a number of things, and a number of things on Reprise, and then of course the movies and all that. But, you know, I mean, let's face it, That's Life was a top 10 Billboard single for how many weeks, or Strangers in the Night, and on like that. And, you know, he's big on At the Sands and all that, and, you know, the rest of his career. It was 67 when he did that album with Antonio Carlos Jobim and a lot more. So I'm not sure what else you might want to know. But that is that's the deal. All right, so we don't have to talk about music, but we can. Although next hour, I promised I would play a Dr. Demento favorite. Yeah, the Pink Burrito song, which actually is not named the Pink Burrito song as far as it goes. But my favorite version was Radio Free Earth, but that's not the original version. The original version from 1974 that Dr. Demento played all the time, get a load of this, was R. Crumb. And yes, the cartoonist, absolutely. So maybe we'll talk a little about him as well. But if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. We can talk about anything you want, actually. 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. On this, the 20th of February, and we have Carol is wonderful at doing show prep and telling me what's going on, particularly of moons, where the moons are at any given time, and where they're, look at this. The new moon, the next new moon, is a week from today, February 27th at 7:45 p.m. Central. So if you're into writing those prosperity checks, yeah, Thursday, next Thursday before 7:45 p.m. Full moon. Well, that's the day before the Ides of March. That's March 14th, 1:54 in the morning, and Central Time. And so that's the deal. Then, of course, on the Ides of March, we have Mercury in retrograde for all of that. So we mentioned about Monday and the Kindness Day. So what is today? National Comfy Day. Ah, National Muffin Day. National Love Your Pet Day. And National Cherry Pie Day. Ooh, Q. Robert and Johnny. not skip and flip. It's also National Leadership Day. All right, so I don't think we'll be celebrating any of that as far as that goes, but we might be waltzing down memory lane, see who was born today or yesterday. That was Lou Christie, by the way, who turned 82 yesterday, and more, plus your requests and your calls. We'll talk to Laura, we'll talk to Sally, and we'll talk to you coming up on WGN Radio.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl and never ever think of counting sheep. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her most of all.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, that'll be the final Frank Sinatra for tonight. But that was his first 12-inch 33 and a third LP in 1955 in the Wee Small Hours. It was a concept album. It did very well for him, to say the least. And yes, that absolutely was a partnership with Nelson Riddle. And by that time, he was firmly back and embarked on his first tour of Australia that year. I don't know if you'll remember this Van Morrison record, but and the album was panned, but some of the critics at least said there were some great lyrics. And I thought the opening lines to this were just tremendous, if you're a Nelson Riddle fan or a Frank Sinatra fan even.
Kids, take the first takes. Ain't that some interpretation? When Sinatra sings against Nelson Riddle's strings and then takes a vacation, singing some hard time.
Yeah, and you can hear the rest of it. But yeah, I thought great in opening lyrics anyway. All right, so we got Laura, we got Sally, we got Andy, and we're going to get to all three of them. But let's start with Laura on WGN Radio. Welcome. Laura, are you with us?
Hi, Raleigh.
Yeah, there you are. Okay.
Hi.
All right.
Sorry for the delay. I had to take you off speaker.
Ah, okay.
I unfortunately didn't get into until the last part of Don't Know Why You Were Talking About Frank Sinatra, but... in the future, would you be able to play one of my, I do theater, so he did Guys and Dolls, Sue Me. That's the only, being a singer, that was the only song that he did solo in the whole show. So I don't know what that was all about. But do you know, or happen to know, and Marlon Brando, of all people, is not a singer. He was in that and did a whole bunch of songs, but... did he do them, or was there a ghost singer? I'm always curious about that.
I know
that's not your thing, but I thought I'd ask.
Right. I do absolutely not like musicals, but yeah, at all. And, that be the case, that was Guys and Dolls that you mentioned, and he did it with Vivian Blaine. And, there were Sam Levine and Vivian Blaine had done it. So yeah, I have no idea. You would have to ask somebody who likes musicals.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Well, you can skip playing the song, but just thank you for playing Frank Sinatra.
Oh, absolutely.
I love his music.
Good deal. Good to hear from you. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Raleigh.
All right. So 888-876-5593 8888 Raleigh. It's sort of weird, too, that I would say that because I love the Rupert Holmes stuff, and I'm not talking about Escape, the Pina Colada song necessarily, but, you know, the Widescreen album and the two others that followed it on Epic are just as classy as they get. And more people have told me, you know, those are more like Broadway musicals. And he did actually do the score for a Broadway musical and all that, but not sure why I love them, but the rest of the stuff... Can leave it rather than take it. Sally in Peoria, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, good to be talking to you again.
Yeah.
And I had a couple questions. There was a, I thought anyway, I was pretty young. I started out with 78 records.
Sure.
Speed 78.
Sure.
And I had one that I thought was Frank Sinatra. You Got Too Many Sweethearts was one side, and Honestly, I Love You was the other side. And I've listened to a lot of 40s music, and I've never been able to find it. And I just wondered if that was something, you know, if I got a faulty memory, or is there indeed two Frank Sinatra songs with those titles?
I Honestly Love You, I think I've seen that, but on those are later things like that he did. As far as earlier, that, I don't know. And yeah, it would be on shellac, obviously. Anything before 1950 is going to be on shellac. So, and of course, it could have been from his big band era, too, so he might not have even been credited with it. So let's see what I can find out, if anything. Let's see. Looking for things from. Do you remember? Well, of course, if it's shellac, if it's 78, we're talking before 1950. So here's the first one. I don't know is the answer to that. I absolutely don't know. I don't see it readily. So.
Okay. Yeah. That's well. Like I said, it could be faulty memory.
Could be right, too, you know, as far as that goes. And it, like I say, it also might have been something with Tommy Dorsey or with Harry James.
And I couldn't tell you the label because not being able to see,
right.
I just wasn't interested in labels at that time.
Well, sure.
So I don't know.
Sure.
Okay. And another thing I wanted to ask you, did you find that those songs by John Stone?
I have them down on the list, and I have been looking. I have not found them online, so probably I'll have to, when I have time to go back through my boxes of 45s, I'll have to find the original 45 for you. But I've got it. You know, it's just a question of where. So it's not online. I even tried YouTube because I thought,
that's where I looked.
Yeah, maybe YouTube, but it's not on there. So
no, it isn't.
Which was interesting to me because I guess I'm surprised by what's not there and more surprised by sometimes what is. But neither Mirror Mirror or Be Sure was there.
Okay.
But I will keep looking as far as that goes. And it was on Specialty, so that, you know, I mean, legitimate label, Art Roop and all that. And, you know, and in fact, Mac Rebenek, Dr. John the Night Tripper, he co-wrote Be Sure. So this should be something that should be available. But if not, I'll just go ahead and get the 45 when I can find it.
Yeah, well, I don't have a turntable. See, I don't have it anymore.
Well,
or I sure would buy it.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I've got it somewhere in a box, and if I find it, I'll digitize it and put it on.
Oh, good.
All right.
Okay, well,
it won't be anytime soon, though, but yeah, I've got far too much
to
do. But I'll think about you when I come across it, I promise. Thanks for calling, Sally.
Okay,
bye.
Thanks, Raleigh.
Sure thing.
Bye.
Yeah, and like I say, it was on Specialty. I was very surprised that stuff wasn't on YouTube because, you know, but then again, a lot of stuff that's on YouTube and they'll show a nice picture of the original 45, but you listen to what's there and you say, you know, it came from a CD. That's right. And I don't think there are any CDs with the Johnny Stone songs as far as that goes, interestingly enough. And but sooner or later, you know, I will come across this. And I've got a Specialty promo copy, I think. It's all white with black letters. All right, Andy in Norridge, welcome back to WGN Radio. Andy.
This evening.
How are you?
I'm all right. How about you?
Can't complain.
Good, good. I'm calling with a couple of questions for you and to also ask you to play a couple of requests for me.
Okay.
Let me give you the two song requests. The first one's kind of an incongruous title, Don't Play That Song, by the late, great Mr. Benny King.
Right, right. You Lied. Okay, sure.
Yes, yeah. And the other one is by the late, great Mr. Gene Pitney, If I Didn't Have a Dime.
Oh, really? You're going back to the country days on Music Core.
Sure. Is that considered country?
Yeah, that's about the time. He used to do duets with George Jones, believe it or not. And that's around the time that he was stopping doing that and getting into pop.
Uh-huh. And my first question for you is, last night I went to a presentation at my local library, The History of Motown Records.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in the presentation, it was explained that the composing team of Holland, Dozier, and Holland had racked up about like 9 number one singles that they had written in 1 year span. And they went to Mr. Berry Gordy and hoped to get an increase in pay from him, which he said, you know, turned them down. And it was explained that they sued him and he sued them,
right.
And then they wound up leaving Motown.
Right, and starting Invictus.
Is that where they went to some other label?
Yeah,
and did
no,
they
no.
have?
They started Invictus. It was created by Brian and Lamont and Eddie. And the deal was it was distributed through Hot Wax, like Buddha. But Hot Wax was also Holland, Dozier, Holland owned. So, HDH were huge, whether it was the Supremes or the Four Tops or all that. And, they couldn't get what they wanted. They not only wanted money. That was only part of it. They also wanted control. And they were not offered that. So, you know, they did Hot Wax and then Invictus and then Hot Wax. And Invictus was like chairman of the board, give me just a little more time, and Frida Payne, you know, that was all. And they did a distribution deal originally with Capitol and then with Columbia. As of 1973, it was Columbia that was, because, you know, an independent label is only going to be as good as its distribution arm. And they folded in about 1977.
Did they have the same kind of success writing songs they left Motown as far as number one songs and...
Well, I think there were, but you also have to put this in perspective, because when you're talking about the early 60s and, you know, you're talking about early Supremes and some of the other Motown acts, that was a very different time than when you're talking about 1971. So if you put it in perspective, I would say that absolutely they were very successful with it. But in terms of are you going to have the same impact that you would have, when you were in 1964 doing stuff on Tamla? Probably not, but I look at that as more of a product of the time than any of their talent stuff. And you know, when you're doing things independently, you've got a lot of problems in terms of distribution, what it's going to cost you, and how the money is handled, and ultimately cash flow was probably their biggest problem. But, you know, they had a lot of stuff, like Give Me Just a Little More Time. That was a big record by Chairman of the Board, and Band of Gold, Frida Payne, obviously, was big. You know, so, several...
And they composed those songs.
No, actually, they did not compose Give Me Just a Little More Time. I think Give Me Just a Little More Time was General Johnson, but I could look that up and see, but I think it was General Johnson.
So maybe as far as composing goes, they
were still doing successful. But you're comparing apples and oranges. You just can't compare the music industry in 1971 to the music industry in 1964. It's a whole different ballgame.
Did you ever see the HBO special Hitsville, The Making of Motown?
I have never seen it, but I have it. I have Val Shively is always sending me all these DVDs, and I've got it. And maybe one of these days before I die, I will actually watch it, but I've never seen it.
They showed quite a bit of internal ongoing stuff at Motown at the time. Time it was happening, yeah.
Right, it was a soap opera at Motown, as far as that. And, of course, the label Motown came later in there. You know, first you had Tamla and Gordy. And, of course, you had a number of other labels, too. But there were a number of other people in Detroit. In fact, Motown wound up buying some of those labels. Ed Wingate's label, like Golden World, things like that. Motown scarfed that up. And then you had things that Motown couldn't touch, like all of the Ollie McLaughlin stuff, like Barbara Lewis and stuff like that. That never folded into Motown. So Detroit's an interesting animal when it comes to music. But Berry Gordy was very wise in how he understood how to market this. He was tremendous at that. You know, you can say what you want about him, and God knows I could write a book, but I wouldn't. But he understood how important it was to get those records played on general market top 40 stations if he wanted to sell things in the millions.
Did you ever go to Detroit and go on a tour of it? I guess it's like a little museum now.
I've certainly driven by it enough, not for that reason on Grand, but no, I haven't. I haven't toured it. Not the kind of thing that would interest me very much. But I'm certainly seen that building. You know, six ways to Sunday. So yeah. And you know, when you're doing that, if you're making the round, but there again, you know, I'd be more interested in going to you know, if I'm going to Detroit, I want to see both locations of Fortune Records. Now, they're both torn down now, but nonetheless, I mean, to me, Fortune Records is a hard stopper. And, you know, so stuff like that, you know, so, hey, Motown had a lot of things going for it.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about was the car that my wife drives. It's an older model, 2011, but we've got a Sirius radio subscription in that car. And she told me that she heard a DJ on one of the Sirius stations make a comment that on records that are played on Sirius, the composers and the artists are paid royalties.
Okay, that's because they're not a terrestrial station. And it's not composer and artist. Here is the deal. Traditionally, radio stations have to pay music for licensed music, and what they're paying the publisher and the composer. But years ago, there was a whole big thing about the artists and the labels weren't getting their due. So Congress passed some laws when they redid copyright for the ad nauseum time, and they created something called Sound Exchange. Anything that streams, and of course this would be Sirius and XM, obviously has to pay Sound Exchange. The Sound Exchange royalties are distributed to the artists and to the labels. And so that is different from the performing rights societies like BMI, ASCAP, CSAC, which pay the composer and the publisher. But terrestrial radio is exempt from paying Sound Exchange royalties, but if terrestrial radio streams, they must pay it. Like, for instance, I stream my show, and I stream the radio stations I own, and so I have to pay even a minimum. The absolute minimum is $1,000 per station per year, and then you got to report. So but of course I despise this because on my one station I would love it if the record labels and the artists got any royalties, but Sound Exchange will never find these people. You know, my favorite example, if I was talking about it again at dinner, my big example that I talk about all the time is Shamal Records. Shamal Records was a label with one song and only one song by a group that only did one song. I play it all the time. But I can't find out. Finally, I realized, because I kept looking for, like, Mr. Shamal. I actually called people whose last name was Shamal to, you know. Anyway, that didn't work out. I've since discovered, at least I believe.
Would you like some royalties, sir?
No.
No,
I just want to know who they were. And what I finally realized was Shamal is probably a contraction. It was probably some guy named Chandler and somebody named Malowitz or something, I don't know, and it became Shamal. But no one can find this label. And they had one song, Shamal 101. But, you know, I play that, I report it, and when I report it, I know that Sound Exchange isn't giving anybody any money.
What part of the country was that?
Who knows?
Oh, it doesn't say it on the record
label? If it said it on the record label, then I could absolutely find it. But no, there's no clue. It's just Shamal 101.
Raleigh, nice talking with you. Thank you for answering my inquiries.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you called. If you ever find the Vitones, that's who did Shamal 101, let me know.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
I've never heard it. Bye.
All right.
Bye, Raleigh.
Yeah. And by the way, there are over 6 groups known as the Vitones, and people are always saying to me, I found the Vitones. No, you didn't. All right. So, yeah, believe me, if you think you're doing it online, and then you'll go to like, you get excited, it'll like 45cat.com, it'll say Shamal Records discography. I'm like, oh good, and you go there and it's the Vitones, their version of Blue Moon, which I played before and I love it, by the way. I think it's my favorite version of Blue Moon, and that is the Vitones. But I'm pretty sure Shah and Mal might be different, but the label itself, it's kind of a beige label with some red lines on it, and it just says Shamal Records. Now, the problem is that Blue Moon was written by Rodgers and Hart, so that's not going to help you. And it says Robbins Music Corporation. Yeah, well, that's because Blue Moon was Rodgers and Hart. Okay, so then the only other thing that was almost a clue, because underneath Vitones, it says with Billy Harrington Quartet. There is a Billy Harrington who's a musician now. He has absolutely nothing to do with Shamal or the Vitones. So I can't tell you how many times I've been looking at it that way. But that's all you got. You got no information about where the label might be, who are they, whatever. And of course, because it was Blue Moon, that's not going to help you any. You know who Rodgers and Hart are. You're trying to find out who the Vitones was. And what was Shamal? I'm pretty sure Shah and Mal. I'm pretty sure that's it. Anyway, 888, but I digress. I haven't forgotten my promise to tell you all about Verve and about Reprise. By the way, they were both sold. In fact, Verve went in 1960 and Reprise went in 1963. And I said that for John, who was asking about that. So anything you see on the imprints later, it wasn't the original label. All right, so we'll talk about that and more. But right now we'll talk about the news on WGN Radio.
My TV tray, bring a load of RC Cola, a TV dinner, a plate of Twinkies, and it takes a pink burrito for to keep me clean. TV dinner is a meal that I'm loving. Take off the foil, 30 minutes in the oven. Bring a load of RC Cola, a TV dinner, a plate of Twinkies, and takes a pink burrito for to keep me clean. Don't like no carrots, can't stand no peas, but a pack of Ding Dong bring me down to my knees. Bring a load of RC Cola, a TV dinner, a plate of Twinkies, and takes a pink burrito for to keep me clean. That 24-inch color brings a load of RC Cola, a TV dinner, a plate of Twinkies, and takes a pink burrito for to keep me clean.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, R. Crumb and his Cheap Suit Serenaders, 1974. That's the version Dr. Demento played. But as I was mentioning, I, for whatever reason, I preferred, came out a few years later, the Radio Free Earth version.
Bring a load of RC Cola, TV dinner, plate of Twinkies, and a taste of pink burrito for to keep me clean. meal that I'm loving.
All right, so I'll leave it to you which one you you prefer. But R. Crumb, of course, much more famous, and not as a musician, but as a cartoonist. And he was the founder of Zap, which one of the first successful underground comic publications. He was in all 16 issues, and he developed countercultural icons Fritz the Cat and Mr. Natural, and of course all the images from his Keep on Truckin' strip. And bottom line is his projects were interesting. He was no stranger to scatological humor or pornographic comics, but nonetheless interesting stuff. And he came by it somewhat naturally in terms of self-defense as a kid. He was born in Philadelphia, and his parents, his mother was addicted to amphetamines and abused them terribly, diet pills and all that, and it was an unhappy marriage, but they were Catholics and they weren't going to divorce, and there were other kids and all that. Yeah, four other children, and so sadly, a couple of them suffered from mental illness, and you could imagine, but they moved from Philadelphia when Robert was young. They moved to Albert Lea, Minnesota, and then it got worse, to Ames, Iowa for a couple of years, and then Milford, Delaware. And he and his brothers, inspired by Walt Kelly and the Fleischer Brothers animation and others, they drew their own comics. And his cartooning developed as his older brother Charles pushed him into it, saw the, you know, talent and all that. In 1958, when he was a kid, the brothers self-published three issues of Foo in imitation of Harvey Kurtzman, Humbug and Mad, which they sold door-to-door with little success, but that was the deal. And, so John just handed me a book, R. Crumb's Heroes of Blues, Jazz, and Country. Yeah, plus John has all the comics as well. And yeah, that was interesting. So anyway, that was the deal with Dr. Demento. And that was 1974, R. Crumb and his Cheap Suit Serenaders on the Blue Goose Records label. And there were several things. It was an album. In addition to Get a Load of This, which is the Pink Burrito song, everything from Willie the Chimney Sweeper to the Cuckoo Wall. Yeah, and I had but 50 cents, and on it goes. Then later works we couldn't say on the radio. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. All right, let's see what we got here. Oh, we got Tubby. All right, well, that's the reason we went into that Frank Sinatra discussion.
You do, my dear.
All right.
With all the accolades that go with, oh, my gosh. I didn't expect all that, and I'm so grateful. You know, it made me feel like when I was in the limo with Dizzy, and when the way that people, you know, treated me like I was the special one, and when I was at the jazz showcase, when I came in, the regular folks knew me.
Yeah.
They got me a chair when everybody else wondered why they were flipping this chair over the bar. just wonderful. I can't find a cover to that CD of that one song. I'm curious to know if you actually like that particular song. It just does something to me. It makes me dizzy. Okay, looky here. Thank you first for that.
Yeah.
That was special. Okay, you know what came to my mind the other day? The 70s.
Yeah.
I was going through the YouTube, right? And that particular one for Kennedy Center Honors when Carole King was sitting up there with her mouth hanging open.
Yeah.
And Aretha came out with that fur coat. And then when she finally stood up and started singing, she had to just drop the fur coat on the stage. It was funny as hell. That was so special. Me and my college friend, also one of my dear college friends, who introduced me to Donny Hathaway.
Aww.
Oh, God, here's a great story. I forgot about that. When I was at Antioch College, we had so many special things happening. And now I can't think of this guy's name. But they were trying to, there were two people on campus, and I have their picture, but they were trying to make it so people had the rights to their own music. I have to go back. My short-term memory won't let me bring their two names. I know you know who these two people are. Anyway, he introduced me to Donny Hathaway, their music, and he could sing his butt off. And they had the music room was just this cute little white house that had a porch went all the way around it. And I would go out there and just sit outside the building and listen to these people play piano. And people like Eddie Harris, you know. They said they composed their music on the piano. That's when I had learned that.
Yeah.
All of them. People, you notice when when they really want to get their point across, they just go to the piano themselves. They don't want nobody playing for them, these great artists. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They just grab the keyboard. Okay, now, the 70s, across the board. So I didn't realize I had tapestry and all that, and those were the few albums that everybody had. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
There were albums that were cross. I mean, you had your good stuff. You know, I told you about that Charles Lloyd one that played 24/7 out of somebody's window,
yeah,
in the dormitory. Yeah. Forest Flower, I think that was the name of it. But it's interesting. I mean, across the board. You agree, right?
I'm
talking every genre of music.
Absolutely.
For some reason, the 70s was like, it was kicking all the way across. Okay, going to the bottom of this. Yes, White Fence Farm was very special. I'm a chef de cuisine, but they had the best chicken, and I was fortunate enough that my mom's best friend, we always went to dinner after church on Sundays, and that was one of our favorite places to go. It was a long ride, but it was worth the ride.
Okay? Yeah.
That guy was talking about. So he knew what he was talking about. That was a good place. That other place, where was it? Joe was going to look it up. You said they were in Canada? I didn't get a chance to write it down.
Chicken Delight, yes. A guy who had franchised it when it was operative in the United States, a guy in Winnipeg, bought the rights to the name and all that. And Chicken Delight is still a lot of locations in Manitoba, but other ones as well throughout Canada. There's one.
But you didn't find one in the States, right?
There's one, I think, in Saskatoon that I passed by a few years ago. Now, I realize most people wouldn't be going through Saskatoon, but it really is very nice. They've got some hills and stuff like that. So if you're leaving Edmonton and you're going east, you might want to try Saskatoon. But otherwise, you've got a number of Manitoba locations.
Okay, Manitoba.
Yeah, right. I don't think you'll be going anytime soon, but that's all right.
No, I won't. But I'll keep it in my memory bank for that.
Yes.
Remember the London House?
Yes, of course.
Okay, now, you know where I met Frank? I met Frank. I wasn't a chef yet. It was my executive chef that sent me to chef school, and they taught me. I was at Garde Manger and whatever else is needed, Monday Night Buffet, which is a good place to start, actually. At Wendell's in New York, I was the night pastry chef. But, you learn. And so Frank and the guys, they would come from this, I can't name it, think of the place. It was out southwest in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And they would come, and they play 2 weeks, and then they come to the Four Torches. You familiar with the Four Torches?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's where I worked. That was my first restaurant job.
Oh, wow.
And Frank and those guys would come through there, and they'd hang out all night. I remember one night he got drunk, and they still got him. That was the night they got him on the microphone, okay?
Okay.
That's before I knew who Frank Sinatra was, okay?
Yeah.
And he passed a $100 tip. I'll never forget.
Nice.
Now, Four Torches London House. Okay. My mom was born in Asheville, North Carolina. You were talking about Kentucky. She grew up in Berea.
Wow.
So she really is a Kentuckian. But when I was talking about Corbin, it was my auntie and those five children that we never met. And they were afraid for us to meet because they figured there would be no more an illness, no more none of us, okay? It has a real long history, which if my sister has dug into that stuff, I have not, okay? I pretty much live in the present. It was our head down here. My mother used to take us to the London House. She loved Cannonball Alley.
Okay.
And I never forget going to see, as a very young person, being in a nice, I guess they said, who are all these young people in here? I can't even tell you how old I was, so that's how far back that goes. Okay, well, I got anything else important I want to share? Not pretty much, but I thank you. And when I find this tune, I just really want to know if you like this tune. When I find this CD case, remember when Starbucks Coffee was selling CDs at the cash register?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where I got that particular one.
Okay.
So when I pulled the cassette, I guess you wonder why I didn't just look at the cassette label to get the tune. They don't list them on the CD.
Oh, don't you hate that?
So I just wanted you to know why I couldn't go to the CD.
Right, right. Well, it'll come to you. But yeah,
I know, but I can't. But I'm mad because I want to hear it. Because there's some nights I come in, it's just all Tony Bennett. Then there's nights where I come in and it's all Frank Sinatra. Or it's all Shirley Horn. You know what I'm saying? It's all Sarah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Rowley, so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Talk to you soon.
In the world. Shout out to Jim, Johnny G, and James.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, yeah, London House. That was on Wacker. And that was in the London Guarantee and Accident Company building. I assume that was one of the many insurance companies back in the day. All right, so 888-876-5593. It's time. It's the time you've been waiting. Normally, you would hear Walter's perspective because it is time for Walter's perspective. But, of course, right now you're going to hear nothing. Maybe you should have your hearing checked. It's sponsored. If you were going to hear it, it would be sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. WGN Radio. We'll forego the bumper because I got a full board of calls, and we've only got an hour left after this. So we got a first-time caller, too, and we're going to Les, a first-time caller from Ogden, Illinois. How's it going, Les?
Doing this fine. A friend of mine just turned me on to your show and a couple weeks ago, and I started listening, and now I'm hooked.
Well, thank you.
And I'm calling because of the... I want to pick your brain about a couple of guys, one named Raul Donner.
Well, yeah, Chicago's own Raul Donner. He was from Norwood Park, and he died at 41 years old 41 years ago this April.
With a health issue of some sort, I think.
Yeah, he had cancer. In fact, it was I found out about it because I got a call. I'm trying to think from Dick Biondi, who said, "Hey, Raul's in trouble. Will you publicize that?" And I was at Billboard at the time, and I did. So yeah. And of course, he recorded a cover of "The Girl of My Best Friend." Yeah, Raul Donner and the Starfires, and of course, he also had a few other records as well. And he was on Big Beat, Alan Freed. Yeah.
And he was terrific.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely right. You know, we're talking about Reprise Records earlier, and he was recording for them for a while. Never had any hits. He was on Redbird. Really, it was just those three records in the beginning that were big. You know, "Girl of My Best Friend," "You Don't Know What You Got Till You Lose It," and oh, come on, why can't I think of the third? I like this record too.
Was he the one that sang "She's Everything I Wanted You to Be"?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's where I came in.
Yeah.
That must have been early 60s, maybe. Somewhere between 64, because it was during my high school years.
Yeah, 61, actually. That was 61, and it was on Gone. And yeah, I've still got the single.
And then there's this Terry Stafford, and the only song I remember
Suspicion.
Out of him was Suspicion.
Suspicion, yeah. And that
and
too.
So it comes around to the fact that these guys, did they have any kind of a connection with Elvis?
No.
Because I think I've read somewhere that Colonel Parker got after either, I think, Donner, and told him, you know, here's your money, get out of here and don't ever come back, and kind of ruined his career.
Well,
you know anything about that?
Absolutely, I don't. I guess that's possible, but it's not a story that I've heard. You know, it's possible, but it's very unlikely as far as that goes. Listener, when "The Girl of My Best Friend," some people thought that Elvis was covering himself, and but as far as I know, there wasn't any problem with that. The most interesting thing about Raul Donner is when Led Zeppelin was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Robert Plant cited Raul Donner as an influence, and I've been laughing about that ever since. But Terry Stafford actually was a songwriter as well, and in 1973 he had a big hit with "Amarillo by Morning." He wrote it, he didn't sing it, but of course his voice, he sounded like Elvis, and he was a guy from Oklahoma who was actually into high school sports and all that, but he was in a local rockabilly group, and he moved to California. And Suspicion, you know, that's another Elvis Presley cover as far as that goes. And interestingly, it made it to number three nationally. And what's interesting to me about that, it was on a small label, the Crusader label. And so you don't see that. You also don't see an artist at that period of time, because this is April of 64, the Beatles were pretty much everything, and it was the Beatles and in the top 10 him. So yeah. He wrote a song, Big in Dallas, that Buck Owens rewrote and recorded. That was a hit. Like I say, George Strait's Amarillo by Morning was a big hit. He died young. He died of liver failure in Amarillo. And, you know, that was it. So, yeah.
Are you familiar with a WGN DJ of the past, Mike Rapchick?
Well, certainly I know who he is, and I thought I associated him more with WCFL, but I could be wrong. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay where you are. I got the news. Stay where you are, and we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Well, you wake up in the morning, boy. You hear the ding-dong ring. Then you look upon the table, boy. You see the same darn thing. You find no food upon the table, boy. There's no fork up in the pan. But you better not complain, boy. You get in trouble with the man. And the midnight special, shine its light on me. Let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me. Well, yonder comes Miss Rosie, boy. How in the world do you know? By the way she wears her apron, boy, and the clothes she wore, the umbrella on her shoulder, piece of paper in her hand. Well, she come to see the governor, she wants to free her man. And the midnight special, shine its light on me. Let the midnight special shine its ever-loving light on me. Now if you're ever in Houston, boy, well, you better do right. Hey, you better not gamble, boy, and you better not fight. For the sheriff, he'll grab you, and the boys will pull you down. And the next thing you know, boy, you're prison bound. Midnight special, shine its light on me. Let the midnight special shine its ever
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and yes, that's Paul Evans on the Guaranteed label. That was one of Joe Carlton's labels. In addition to Carlton, he had Guaranteed. The Midnight Special was 1959, and it was Jack who wanted to hear that in St. Charles, and now he has. And we're talking to Les, the first-time caller in Ogden, Utah. So are you still with me, Les?
Yeah, but I'm in Ogden, Illinois.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not Utah.
I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I moved you. Well, I hope you'll like your new location. No, sorry about that. Yes, you are. And I used to live by Ogden, Utah, so that's why I thought that. But anyway, Mike Rapchick, you know, in 58, he went to WCFL. And that's, you know, he had been on AAF for years before that and a couple other little stations. But on CFL, my all-time favorite morning man was Dan Sorkin. And so Mike was on right before Dan. And, in fact, they shared an office. And he was there until CFL went top 40 in, I guess that was 65. And so it was interesting because about, I don't know, 78 or so, they hired him back. And his first show, he opened the mic and said, as I was saying. And then, of course, from 70 to 95, he had a weekend thing on GN. But to me, he'll always be CFL.
That's where I picked him up on the weekends there. Matter of fact, I taped a lot of his programs on cassettes. And And he, like your show, he has a lot of call-ins, which is great. You don't hear that anymore. How long have I been missing your show? When did you start this?
Well, it depends what market, but I'd say 1967, but it's been a lot of markets.
And you're in Chicago now?
I am actually not in Chicago. I would love to be in Chicago. We were planning to come, and we had some medical problems that kept us here, and we are in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And not all that far from Orion Samuelson.
Are you an Illinois native?
No, closest to Chicago, I lived in Rockford. I did afternoons on WROK years ago, that was a lot of fun. But always loved Chicago radio, and like I say, Sorkin was my favorite morning man.
Just in case you have listeners there who like big band music, the only big band music I can find anymore is on Sunday evenings, and it's out of Toronto, Canada. CFZM, and that's AM 740.
Yeah, Zoomer Radio. They do a lot of top 40 and all that. But yes, on the weekends they mm-hmm. have big. But yeah, that 740 is a beautiful Canadian clear channel, and they got a lot of stuff. But I think Eleanor Moore is the person who plays the big band stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
We got a guy that I hear here, his name is Dean Holland.
Uh-huh.
And that's after it. When I started listening to it, it was George Genescu.
Right.
Then it was Frank Proctor.
Uh-huh.
Now it's Dean Holland.
Okay.
So it goes 8 to midnight in Canada, and it's 7 to 11 here in Illinois.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a song by Nat King Cole? It's a beautiful song. I hope maybe you'll play it tonight. Million Dollar Baby in a 5 and 10 cent store.
Yes, I don't know if it's on this computer. If it is, I'll play it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. And my last question, I'm going to see this friend who recommended you to me. I'm going to see him tomorrow. I'm going to look up a CC Radio EP Pro.
Okay.
Radio. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, yeah. Inexpensive and good reception.
Well, Raleigh, you're going to be the reason I'm going to put a bedside radio in there.
Oh, no. Well,
and,
now.
You're very, very enjoyable listening, and good luck.
Well, thank you. It's good to hear from you, but sleep is sacred, so do not stay awake for me. But if you are awake, I appreciate you listening.
Hey, in a few years, I'll be getting all the sleep I want. So.
Won't we both? Absolutely.
I'll sacrifice.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. But more days than not, I say, I'm ready. All right. So 888-876-5593. Let's see if Joe is still in Phoenix and still awake. Are you there, Joe? No, we lost Joe. All right, well, Joe, you'll have to call me back. You want to talk about buying gold and silver, and I'll be happy to do that. Gold's doing very well right now, but you don't buy it because you think it's going way up in price. You buy it because it's never going to fully lose its value. It's the only thing that has intrinsic worth. You know, everything else is a balance sheet. And to an extent, the price of gold is problematic because more gold and silver traded every day than exists on the planet. So there's a lot of people buying futures and all that. That influences the price dramatically. So while it's near $3,000, an ounce now, that's still dramatically lower than it would be if it weren't for the futures buying. But again, you're not buying it because you think you're going to just absolutely make a killing in the market. You buy it because you want a certain amount of your assets to be something that will never be worthless. But when you buy gold or silver, watch out, because there's a lot of people, when you look at the commission rates, that it's just frightful how much you'll be paying for it. So be a smart shopper. All right, Jim in Richmond, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. How are you this evening?
Well, more to the point, how are you? How'd the eye exam go?
I went yesterday to the eye exam, mm-hmm. and he gave me a shot of Eylea HD because everything was very, blurry and everything.
Right.
And today it got clear. And then tomorrow I go see the glaucoma specialist, and we'll see what happens there.
But that's great. It got clear. That's wonderful.
Well, just got a little clearer.
Well,
the distance and that didn't change.
All right, but close up.
It got to the point where it was so blurry, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't swollen, and that's what he was happy about.
Yeah, well.
So I got the, go on.
I was going to say, if there was no swelling, what did he attribute all? Because you were really concerned because the vision was really deteriorating. So if it wasn't swelling, what did he attribute the deterioration to?
He doesn't tell me. Mm. He's you know, we waited an hour and a half. We got there on time. And we found out that he was off all last week because he was in Arizona by you. Because he was giving eye exams to all the White Sox players.
Oh.
You know how they have when the players come in?
Yes, they probably needed them. Oh, who said that? Yeah.
Right. But when the players come in, they have to have a health report.
Yes, of course.
They probably saw orthopedic guys and everything. But he's the guy that goes there to give them the eye exams.
He said
there were so many minor leaguers. He said he was so busy.
Wow.
Because they all want to get in the majors. So that's where that goes. And then tomorrow I see the glaucoma specialist.
And,
I have a bunch of things I want to talk about. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, is this Dr. Williams, by the way?
It's Dr. Cohen.
Okay.
Jack Cohen. He went there last year and the year before.
Okay.
Right. And he sees the, White Sox, but you could not talk to him about the White Sox last year. He wasn't very happy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I can understand that.
Right. And I wanted to tell you, I complained when I bought the CC radio, the pocket radio.
Yeah.
And I finally figured it out.
Yeah.
It can't be anywhere near a TV. It can't be anywhere near my iPad. It can't be anywhere near my phone.
Right. That's true. Right. That should be true with most radios. It's going to pick up all of that interference.
Right. And my phone has to be by me because it reads my blood sugars. So I found out that if I put it on the other side of the room or if I put it in the other room, it works perfectly.
Right.
So,
good.
You know, I was very upset about the CZ radio and when I first got it.
Right, but get it away from interference, and you'll see it's just wonderful.
Right, and then I was sitting on the front porch, and I was wondering why it wasn't working, but it was next to the antenna cables that come in for the TV.
Yeah,
I figured that all out, so I've been trying to tell you that for a long time.
Oh, good, well, I'm glad you're happy. Glad you figured it out. Yeah, and there really would be no way to properly shield it because you would also be stopping what you want, which is the reception.
Right.
So best thing to do is keep it separate. You betcha. And I noticed that
then,
a lot. Like here, if I'm trying to DX at night, and in the room I'm in, I've got about a dozen computers around me, and they basically all have to be off if I have a prayer.
Right, and then it's staticky during the day, but crystal clear at night from where I live.
Well,
so I was happy about that.
Yeah, well, good.
And then I wanted to say, I'm worried. I have to talk about other radios in a minute, but I wanted to say I'm worried because I have been listening every day. I have not heard anything from Johnny D. I'm wondering if you noticed that.
Yeah, Johnny D, and I mentioned this on the air, I don't want to belabor it, but he had sent a parody several weeks ago, and it was ridiculously demeaning and insulting, not only to me, but to all of you who listen, and so I told him that we couldn't play it, and by the way, I ran it by a few other people, including Carol, who does the World's Best Show Prep, and she first thing she said is, you are not going to play this, don't worry, I'm not going to play, and a couple other people as well, and what surprised me was, after a while, he turned abusive in emails, and so what I told him, I said, he's welcome to call, and he is, anytime he wants, as long as he's respectful, but I did block him from email, because life is too short for me to get insulting emails, abusive emails, and that's what he sent, so I'll never see another one.
I was just concerned that something might have happened.
No, I don't think so, and, I don't know what's going on with him personally, nor is it any of my business, but if he wants to call and be respectful, he's more than welcome, but I won't see the emails.
Okay. And then the other thing, can I talk about radios?
Absolutely.
Okay. I went to a small grade school in Chicago. It was above the church, and there were 8 classrooms and 28 people. So you went to school every year with the same students.
Mm-hmm.
So I got this kit. It was in the mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I got this kit, and I put together a crystal radio.
Uh-huh.
And I brought it to the classroom, and I was so excited and everything. And then when I turned it on, it went to WIND.
Uh-huh.
So it's not the radio station in the 60s you wanted to listen to.
Yeah, if you were a kid, right. Yeah.
So I got laughed out of the classroom.
Well, that's a shame, and because you still had a radio that worked. And you probably bought it from Allied Radio in Chicago.
I don't know where I got it from, whether the school provided the kit or whether I got it. I don't remember, but I
Allied,
was so proud that I put it together.
Allied Radio used to sell them for $2.50.
Right.
Yeah.
And then later on, it was so funny, later on, my dad gave me a 3-inch, it probably was 9 by 9 or whatever, 3-inch tape recorder.
Uh-huh.
Reel to reel.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. And then I used to tape everything and then bring it to school and, you know, tape the Beatles and everything. And then, you know, and that was that. And then later on, I figured out myself that I found this big, huge speaker in the alley, and I hooked it up on, we had a shed in the backyard that my brother and I turned into a fort, and I hooked the speaker up outside.
Uh-huh.
And then I rewired it and put a new plug on it, and I took the microphone out of the tape recorder, and I plugged it in there. And then I took the microphone and plugged it into the earphone, and then I turned it on record, and I could hear everything for 3 blocks.
Oh, that's great.
So we thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
That we could be hiding in the fort and then hear if Dad was calling for us to come in or Mom was calling. And it was so cool that we did that.
That's great.
And I figured that all out, and I thought that was great.
You know, it's funny. Then, just while you're speaking, John brought me an old picture of him with his father, and they're building. I can tell what it is. It's one of those Allied crystal sets. That's exactly what they were building. But, yeah, those reel-to-reels, they recorded at 1 7/8, those three-inch reel-to-reels. It's I remember them well. And if they were full-track mono, which usually they were, they would play on any machine you had that would pick up 1 7/8, and if you didn't have anything, you could tape it at 7.5 and then play it back at 3 3/4 to hear it.
Right, and we thought it was really cool that we could hear everything in the neighborhood,
right,
you know, while we were sitting in there. And then I wanted to say that my first 4 cars that I had, I replaced all the radios in them.
Really? I guess they weren't General Motors. I don't think you'd replace a Delco.
No, my very first car was a 71 Datsun 510.
Oh, yes, I'd replace the radio, too.
Right, and I think I might have been just AM, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then I replaced it with an AM radio, AM-FM radio.
Right.
And then I was so, the next 3 cars that I got, I replaced the radios in, because I thought I was this great radio genius. And then I had a 74 Gran Torino Brome.
Ah,
and
nice.
You have to hear this with the opera windows and everything. And I got tunnel-mounted Pioneer 8-track player.
Okay.
And it had the boost on it. You know, you hit the power boost.
Yes.
And then I went out and replaced the rear speakers. They had the little shelf in the back with the window. And I put in the Pioneer coaxial speakers.
Yes.
And then my friend and I used to drive around, and that I could not believe we didn't blow the window out in the back, because it used to vibrate so, you go outside and put your hand on it, it was vibrating so loud. And we used to drive around driving everybody crazy with all this big boost. You know, those are the things that I did when I was, you know, growing up. And then later on, I had... My dad had a Harley Davidson, 72 Harley Davidson, and I had my motorcycle, and we were the first to put radios on the motorcycles.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that's what me and radios have been acquainted for a long time.
Oh, yeah. So. No, years ago, around that same time you were putting in radios, there were actually not only AM-FM cassette or AM-FM 8-track, but they would record as well as play. And Krako made one. I think Sony made one. And I thought that was just the best because, you know, you could drive around DXing and actually record it. And haven't seen one of those in 50 years.
Right. And my dad got really, really interested in the radio on it. And he designed helmets. You know, he put speakers in the helmets, and then he took the old, you remember the old 2 or 3 inch long plugs that you would plug in for the headphones and stuff?
Well, yeah. By the way, we still do. You know?
Right. So he had those plugged into his helmet, and my mom would ride on the back of this big electric ride Harley, and they would play the music into their helmets.
Yeah.
And then he found out that he could get a wired in where he would talk and she would hear it.
Okay.
In the back because of the, you know, the mufflers. So
that's great.
My experiences with radio.
Oh yeah. But no, quarter inch plugs are still the standard. They're around everywhere.
Right.
Yep.
But that's what he did, and that's, you know, but before my mom got ill, that's what they used to do.
Yeah, fun stuff.
And then, like I said, I was just worried because I listened to everybody.
Yeah.
And then when Tubby says Jim, is she saying me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Tubby.
All right. Good deal. Well, good to hear from you, Jim. Let me know how it goes next week. I want to know about tomorrow's appointment.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So, 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. We'll get to Eduardo in Tampa, who's been waiting a half a long time. But right now we'll get to the news on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and it's Lee Morgan. Yeah, 1968 on Blue Note. It was an EP, The Gigolo. Yeah, you go to my head. All right, so that was Eduardo's request, and we will get to Eduardo here in a couple of minutes. But Johnny D. has decided to grace us with a call. So, Johnny D., welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thank you, Raleigh, and thank you for being a bigger person than letting me call. I want to thank John for making sure that I am not drunk, firstly. He asked me about it.
Yes, absolutely. A fair question.
And I was completely honest with him, which I'm going to be completely honest with you. And I'd like to thank Jim for being so observant that I haven't called in about a month, okay? Because I've been keeping track. I've been listening every night, Wally. And I'll try to keep this short because I know you got Eduardo and people. I played the song for Becky, the lovely and talented Becky, mm-hmm. and she told me immediately that I should call and apologize. I said, apologize for it. It's a joke.
No,
it's a parody.
It wasn't a joke, but that's okay. I appreciate Becky's thought, but the big thing is I'd love to have you call anytime you want, but I am not going to unblock you from email because that I do not tolerate. There's a one-shot deal, so you're welcome to call, but I won't see the emails.
I'm curious. Please be honest with me. What email was it that you said I sent him?
There were a few, actually, including the one that if you really wanted to insult me, you could do a better job. But there were others as well. And my life is too short. That's all right. You're welcome to call anytime you want, but please don't write.
All right. I'll try to be more civilized. But
and we'll look forward to that.
I don't know. I got problems. I don't know. Something's wrong with me. I'm just a fool.
Well, I know your brothers are always on you saying, stop calling the talk radio show. I know.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, I know.
My younger brother, he couldn't do it because he probably wanted to kick my butt, but he couldn't do it because he can't. Now, my older brother, well, he's getting too old, so I could probably take him too, but... I don't know what's the matter with me. I'm sorry.
No, that's
all right. It wasn't intentional. Well, I just thought of the Randy Newman song. You probably heard the song. I'm dead, but I don't know it. Okay? Now, I took that song.
I know what you did. I know what you did, Johnny.
And then I thought, what could I, my mind, I'm thinking, how could I, use the lyrics to make the song?
No need to explain. It's just that it was very demeaning, not only to me but to other listeners. And you talk about the main reason I blocked you. I think it was the email where you basically said the show's going downhill. You were begging for callers, and I thought life is too short. I don't need it.
There's
no part two on this, but you're welcome to call, and I hope you will call.
Becky told me, I always screw things up, and I do. I admit it. I'm just
well. That's
I don't
fine.
Know.
You call anytime you want.
Maybe
just
I should
be
go
respectful.
To a doctor.
I can't help you with that. But as long as you're respectful, you're welcome to call anytime you want.
Okay. All right.
Thanks. Appreciate
it. Thank you for letting me back in.
Absolutely.
Believe me. It was you are the highlight of my day. Highlight of my week.
You need better days, but that's very kind.
I've seen better days. Yeah. Isn't there a song? Yeah. I've seen better days.
All right. Well, very good.
Now, wait a second. I want to. Hey, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm sorry, Ralph. So, I just wanted to request a song.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. No. It's just. Because earlier you were talking about Sinatra and these people, and before I had gone, when I told you that story about my ex-girlfriend,
Yes.
I think I can leave it out.
Yes.
I was listening to a song, and then this one came on. I was listening to, these old-time singers and stuff, and then the song came on by Jerry Vale. Right?
Oh God! Yeah. Okay.
Jerry Vale, and he said it was the song. He said, "Pretend you don't see her, my heart." Okay. Now this was before I went to that funeral.
Uh-huh.
Right. And that song just nailed it. You know what I mean? Pretend you don't see her. Look somewhere above her. Pretend you don't see her.
You know who wrote that? You know who wrote that, don't you?
Jerry Vale.
No, he sung it, but Steve Allen wrote that.
Steve Allen, the comedian?
Yes. He wrote a number of things, including that. Yeah, but the Jerry Vale version, I think, had Percy Faith and his orchestra behind him. So, yeah, that's a Pretend You Don't See Her is a well-known song.
Oh, that was a beautiful song. But I heard it years ago, I guess. But you know how you play something and then another guy will come on in the same genre? So then Dean Martin. I was listening to Del Martino, someone on it. And then this Jerry Vale came on. Pretend you don't see her. you know, before I went to that funeral.
Steve Allen actually recorded it as well, around the time Jerry Vale did. And then later, a few years later, Bobby V recorded it.
Bobby Vinton?
Bobby V. You know, The Night Has a Thousand Eyes and all those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, all right, Rolly. Thank you for taking my call.
Good deal.
Thank you,
call anytime you want.
I hope you understand.
Absolutely.
I wasn't trying to be but I'm just a fool.
Apology accepted. Call anytime you want. Thanks.
Okay, thank you
all
very
right.
much.
Good,
okay,
good deal. So there you have it from Johnny D. Yes. Look somewhere above her. Pretend you don't love her. Pretend you don't see her at all. Yeah, that was Steve Allen. 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. And that takes us to Eduardo in Tampa. So, Eduardo, welcome back to WGN.
Yeah, good evening. Well, it's good to hear Johnny's doing well here.
Yes.
My younger brother's heading home tomorrow. Well, actually today, Friday, so I'm going to miss him. So it's just going to be me and Mom. So we'll go to the Health Expo on Saturday, get our minds off that.
Okay.
Yeah. I did go to the interview today at JW. So.
And how did it go?
Yeah, I thought it went well. It was a short interview. I mean, they're going to be interviewing other people, so maybe by next week we'll hear something about it.
Okay.
I want to get also hear from the, because I haven't heard from them, the law firm, and then...
That one's kind of exciting. I hope you get that.
It's in South Tampa, but then there's the other one, the Library Associates. But that one is good, too. But the only thing is I remember seeing Ruskin on the... on the end, so.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I know how to get to Ruskin, but, you know.
Yes, right, exactly. Yes, you don't know that you want to. I understand that.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very lovely. It's just not convenient to where you are.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. But, I mean, you cannot turn down... job is wherever it takes you, you know, you got to go for it.
Well, that's true, but hell, it's halfway to Bradenton.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know where these are. Yeah. All right. Well, keep me. Well, hey, it's better than St. Petersburg. Keep me posted.
Yeah. Yeah. Next week, I'll get into Donald Dixon and Daniel Noble. History buffs. So,
okay.
I'll get into that next week. Yeah.
I'll look forward to it.
Okay, Raleigh, thank you very much for your time.
All right, good deal. So we got James, we got David, and I don't know if we have room for you or not. Tomorrow night's a replay of Monday Night Trivia, and then of course, next Monday it is live Monday Night Trivia, and I believe it is a full show, but let me look to make sure, since I sometimes don't know that. Yeah, absolutely. Monday night, the 24th, it's a date, 3 big hours, right here on WGN Radio.
Look somewhere above her. Pretend you don't love her. Pretend you don't see her at all. Pretend you don't see her, my heart. Although she is coming our way, pretend you don't need her, my heart, but smile and pretend to be gay. It's too late for running, my heart. Chin up if the tears start to fall. Look somewhere above her. Pretend you don't love her. Pretend you don't see her at all.
So yeah, on Columbia, 1957, that was the Jerry Vale version that Johnny D asked. But Steve Allen, who wrote it, had it out himself, and then in 1964, Bobby V. cut it.
Look somewhere above her, pretend you don't love her, pretend.
Pretend you don't see her, my heart. Although she is coming our way, pretend you don't need her, my heart. But smile and pretend to be gay.
Yeah, and that was Snuff Garrett producing that, indeed, 1964. All right, so 888-876-5593 in the waning moments. And let's see, we have James on the south side. What's happening tonight, James?
Oh, I'm doing well. I was doing some house cleaning on some of the draft sections of my once I said no, I'm not sending any that have been sitting there for a little over a month. I figured they already might be
right. No, it has to be this week. Yes, and you sent me one from London, for God's sakes. Don't do that again.
Okay, but I got you a good one.
I don't
okay.
care. It's just some woman in London. Not going to work. But
okay, this one this guy got a $42,000 tip for delivering a pizza.
Wow. No, I haven't gotten that one yet, but I do want to mention that I did open the show with the Amazon driver caught on camera running over a woman twice. So we covered that. And I was also glad that you sent us the scam warning, because this one's going around a lot. And the Better Business Bureau said if you're getting a rebate text that you're getting $1,400 from the IRS, don't fall for it.
Yeah, because now those were the more recent ones that I happened to have, and I said I'll send those. I sent those because I got no other ones that I considered of any usefulness other than that, and the one where the dog ways you know your dog is saying goodbye.
Oh, I saw. Yeah, I saw that. But, you know, I read that and realized there was nothing in it that was really too interesting. I was really looking for something, you know, some clue. Not that the dog's going to speak or tap you on the shoulder, but something a little better than the common sense things they had there. Now, the feel-good story of the week was the California farm donating hundreds of thousands of eggs to wildfire victims and first responders.
Oh yeah, that was not, and that one had been in the drafting, but I hadn't been able to send it because I had a problem with the phone.
Yeah, 100-year-old family farm in Santa Maria is working with the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. So good for them. That was a very nice feel good story.
Yeah, because I looked at the rest of them and said, this is like
forget about it. Right.
Would say war.
Yeah, we also covered the woman in Kenner who may have killed the sports reporter, and the outrage that she wasn't put in jail when it happened before.
Yeah, I said, why? But then again, when you see some of the ones, the crime ones, where you say, why are these people, first, why are these people not locked up? And two, why didn't somebody do something before they had a chance to commit it?
Yep.
Yeah, and it's sad. It's truly sad.
Yep.
And if this woman did... she should not be allowed to, I'm not going to say not be locked up forever, but I suspect a lot of people will probably vote for that one.
Yeah, I want to know what was on the judge's mind, you know, and one of the victims even wrote a plea to the judge saying, please get her off the street, she's going to do it again. And that's where you look at it and you become the conspiratorialist and you say to yourself, there must be something else going on here. No judge in their right mind would have just said, you get probation.
I know, but guess what? I think there was some other story. I think I might have said, you probably ignored it because it was too brutal, where the judge, I think the guy got released before he went and did it.
Yeah.
And I'm like thinking, And then you start thinking, maybe either conspiracy or maybe the judge was so overwhelmed that day that he forgot that he should have, about a couple of cases where he should have had a different ruling.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, it's interesting to see. I don't know if there will be any looking at that, but I'm sure the Kenner police weren't too pleased because there were several incidents that they had on record with this woman as well.
Yeah, and it's sad. It's really, okay, I won't run about the Ozempic because they keep running on that. In fact, they're saying Ozempic patients who love eggs.
Oh, yeah. What can I say? When I look at the side effects of drugs people take, and especially when it's for things that are just cosmetic, like I want to lose a couple more pounds, I just shake my head. And even if you want to lose a couple hundred pounds, this is probably not the way to do it for most people.
It's not, because really, if you go about sensibly, you'll be a lot better for it.
Well,
but we have like this whole big that you have between the pharmaceuticals, the cosmetic industry, and the other, I mean, billions of dollars, and they want your heart, body, and soul.
Everybody wants a shortcut, though, so there's a lot of people who fall for it. I have a very good friend who went through a liver transplant a couple of years ago. Actually, it was a kidney transplant a couple of years ago, and it was 100% due to his crazy dieting over the years.
Yeah, here's the thing. The kidney and liver are if you don't believe that there's a higher power. I mean, just think, we can't replicate, especially a kidney thing. We get a big old machine to do what it uses, but it does for many years.
Yeah.
Just to do for a couple of hours.
Well, it's all interesting, but the show has just officially ended. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for the stories.
Okay.
All right.
I gotta strip some more stories off.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. And apologies to David. We didn't get there, but we've got next week. And there's a full live show on Monday for Monday Night Trivia. I'll be working on a theme, I hope, but certainly some bumper stumpers and some more questions. So until that, for live shows, that's a wrap. Again, a replay tomorrow night. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. And I hope you'll do it again next week. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.